message was a very simple one, and its evidence was seen by how many people have taken up chanting Hare Krishna. We see that not only in the Krishna consciousness movement, but so many people, yoga societies, clubs, kirtan groups, they've also heard about mantra chanting, which 50 years ago was a strange thing. If you look at newspaper reports and so on, there was a certain phase where dressing like this, chanting like this, and eating like this was enough to have you sent to a psychiatrist, sometimes for a long time. Of course, things have changed. People have become a little more broad-minded, a little more realized. And yet the real treasure of spiritual knowledge is all contained within this mantra. And this is one of the aspects of mantra. It is compressed sound. It's just like a diamond is compressed carbon, just like this floor. Ultimately, it's more or less just made of wood or carbon, and under right conditions, it means you compress it, and you can transform it into a diamond. It's not as valuable as the diamond that naturally forms, but still sellable. Similarly, if you take all knowledge, and if you compress all knowledge into a very diamond-like form, then that's what becomes this Mahamantra. But unlike a diamond, I don't think you can make diamonds into floors again. But the Mahamantra, by chanting, you can unravel unwrap from it all the transcendental knowledge of the Vedas. Or rather, everything that needs to be known. As we started earlier, in knowledge of the soul, knowledge of God, knowledge of this world, what is time, aside from your watch going around, what is it that actually time is? Because your time isn't your watch going around, otherwise you could stop your watch and stop time. But it doesn't stop time. What are we doing in this world? So we have many books, just like back there on that table. There are books stacked up, and these are the books that His Divine Grace translated from Sanskrit to English, and then He gave His comment or commentary on them. So the same knowledge that's in those books is also inside the chanting. And of course, the best combination is both. Is both reading and chanting. And above that, or along with that, is lifestyle. Just like you see here, we have a vegetarian restaurant, because nonviolence is something that's conducive towards spiritual realization. Violence makes it harder. Lighting a fire with wet wood is a difficult job if the wood is dry. So similarly, if our life is in harmony with the purpose of life, which is self-realization, then that lifestyle is extremely valuable asset in terms of our being to understand what we read, realize what we read, and also to enter into the depths of chanting. So that's one of the aspects of lifestyle. Another one is, for instance, no intoxicants. Avoid and always recommend others to avoid intoxicants, because intoxication is something when you don't like what you are. So you've got to do something about it. But it's not necessary, especially if there are better ways of altering our consciousness, as we were saying earlier, to purify your consciousness. Contaminating it further doesn't do any good, but purifying, it's the right idea, going in the wrong direction. Do something, alter our state of consciousness. And how we live also helps us be more susceptible to the influence of the mantra. And one very underlying or fundamental principle to the effect of the mantra, although it isn't critical for it to act, but it's critical to determine the speed at which it acts, is the actual faith that we have in what a mantra actually is. That faith is acquired by associating with like-minded people, obviously Hare Krishna's. It's acquired by studying what the science of mantra chanting is. I'll give you some material examples. There are many types of mantras. All of those books are full of different mantras, and they're part of the Vedas, which have many mantras for many purposes. For instance, there are mantras to control snakes. If you go to India, you've seen snake charmers. Like, those snake charmers don't sit around dancing and getting slapped around by the snake, because they have to snap them. They don't want to always dance. Just every time someone throws them a little money, then they don't immediately start dancing. Just when they play the shanai, he slaps them. So slapping cobras is a dangerous business, unless you really know what you're doing. So actually, these snakes are hypnotized. And they're hypnotized, just like the snakes themselves hypnotized, they're hypnotized by mantras. There are mantras that control snakes. And Srila Prabhupada told the story that when he went to university during the summer, when he came back from summer holidays, it turned out that during the rainy season, whole university was full of snakes. So they called a snake charmer. He was a different type of snake charmer, but he was snake charmer. That he went in and he chanted mantras, and all the snakes followed him out, and he gathered them up and he took them away. So that's the power of mantra. It can control snakes. It's not such a wonderful thing. With mantras you can do other things. You can create planets if you know the right mantra. And if one reads the Mahabharata, I don't know if we have Mahabharata here, but then previously there used to be weapons, very powerful weapons, which were invoked just by mantras. Atomic weapons, and even more powerful than atomic weapons. So there's a lot of power within the mantra, and according to what it's meant to do, an appropriate type of power is locked into it. But you have to believe in it. It's not something that just happens mechanically. And interestingly enough, you may know that during the Second World War, the Germans were great fans of Sanskrit in India. Actually, they were there before in terms of appreciating the depth of Indian culture. Germans were mad over India and Indian culture. And so Max Müller, who's a German, he's the main translator and commentator of many of the Vedas. But they were also very well aware of these, and of course that's where they got this term Aryan. That's where they got this idea of an Aryan culture. At least that's where Hitler got the concept of an Aryan culture. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, an Aryan jushtam aishvagyam, you're not behaving like an Aryan. Of course, Aryans, especially in India, you don't find too many blonde-haired, blue-eyed people in India. And an Aryan isn't someone who's connected to a geographical location, but an Aryan is someone who has a certain level of consciousness. So civilization is not measured by weapons or strength of arms, but rather by purification of consciousness. Anyway, they knew about these weapons. They knew about these asuras that were invoked by mantras, and that's how they were also trying to actually invoke the atomic weapon. They were all also doing by mechanical means, but they were also trying these mantras. But because they thought the mantras are mechanical, it doesn't work. You have to believe it, you have to know the mantra, and because the mantras are also all persons, so they're personal, you have to actually develop a relationship, and usually that relationship is developed through some type of austerity or some type of austere practice that someone adopts in order to gain the favor of the mantras. And there are so many. Although nowadays, because people tend to be more faithless and they want instant things, but there are no instant mantras. So similarly, Hare Krishna mantra isn't an instant mantra. I think you can appreciate that it has potency when you chant it. But at the same time, the more you know about it, the more you have access to it, because it's a living thing. It's not just sound. Abhinatma Naminamno, the mantra, is a living person. It's just embodied in sound. We're sort of conditioned to identifying people with the things that our eyes show us. I look at this person, and he's the picture that my eyes see. Why? Why do I see that? Because our culture is, I don't believe it if I don't see it. There's a lot of things you don't see that you believe in, though. So persons can take different forms, or they can be represented in different ways, not just in terms of physical form. Something went out, maybe. You know, not just physical form, but also the form of sound. And sound, as we all know, especially in our world today, where we're really into music and communication, we see people, hear people, contact people through sound. Loud enough back there, you can hear me without the mic. Anyway, small room. So this mantra is a living person, and it's extremely powerful because it's the most powerful person. It's non-different than God. Adminatman Namanamino. And when you have faith in that, and the more faith that you have in that, the more actually the mantra will reciprocate. It will act anyway. The example is, for instance, like medicine. Whether you believe in medicine or not, it has its effect. But if you take it in the right way, according to prescription, then chances are that it's going to have a better effect than if you just sort of take it willy-nilly. So let's chant a little more. And do you want the demonstration? Have we got the same guests as we had the day before yesterday?
No, we got some different guests.
We have some different guests.